Hey, would you look at that? Oil's having a good morning. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for David Brancaccio, with the Marketplace Midday Update. Crude oil prices are in a happy place this morning, up more than 3%. West Texas Intermediate is trading at $48 a barrel. That's after a report from longtime oil market bear Goldman Sachs saying the global oil supply glut is over. Karen Cavanaugh, market strategist at Voya Investment Management, joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oil is actually up. Does this impact the way the markets trade, do you think?
I don't think that oil going up is going to have the impact it did when it was going down. When it was going down, it was almost like an affirmation that the global economy was falling off a cliff. Now that it's recovered based on supply considerations, I don't think the market is as concerned with the price of oil.
You know, we've got these bits of data, sort of, for every good thing, there's a bad thing. So if you're an investor, how do you then position yourself in this uncertain time?
That's so true. For every good thing, there is a bad thing. We had good retail sales, but prior to that, we had bad kind of lean jobs report. So I think investors can be confused, but that's the reason to not try to time the market, not try to game diversification. Being globally diversified is probably the safest way to handle these kind of markets, because going forward, we are going to see a lot of conflicting data. There is no real clear path. Global diversification helps ride out those bumps.
What are you going to be looking for in the Federal Reserve minutes on Wednesday?
I think I'll be looking for whether or not the Fed is becoming more hawkish. They've been more dovish in saying that they're kind of holding off on raising rates. But now there are economists out there that are saying there's potential that we could see a couple rate raises during the year. I really think the Fed is probably going to hold off just because of all the conflicting data. But I think that that's what everyone is going to be looking for, to see if there's kind of a change in sentiment with the Fed, that they look more hawkish.
Karen Cavanaugh, market strategist at Voya Investment Management. Thank you.
Thank you.
About 40,000 workers at Verizon have been on strike since April 13th in several East Coast states, including New York, Massachusetts, and Virginia. The striking workers included unionized network technicians and customer service representatives of the company's fiber optic, or Fios, internet, telephone, and TV services. But those divisions are not the big growth areas for Verizon's business. Marketplace's Annie Baxter looks at what the strike tells us about the changing telecom landscape.
Thanks for calling Verizon. Due to a strike, you may experience a delay before reaching an agent.
The striking Verizon workers are on what's known as the wireline side of the business.
People that deal with landline services, whether that's phone or TV or broadband.
Jan Dawson is a technology analyst at Jackdaw Research. He says headcounts of call center and IT workers have dropped as the wireline business has declined. People have mostly given up on landline phones, and growth in fiber optic services is flat. To cut costs in wireline, Verizon wants to outsource more, which the striking workers don't like. And Verizon wants to invest more in wireless services, according to Christopher Yu, a communications law professor at the University of Pennsylvania.
The profitability and the growth potential on the wireless side is just so much higher.
So what leverage do the striking workers have, given that they're not on the growth side of the business? Yu says they'd have to show it's costlier for them to stay on strike and disrupt customer service than for Verizon to meet their demands. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Hi, David Brancaccio here. Thank you for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. We give you the context we think you need to understand what's happening in the economy and why it matters to you. Some context on us: we are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. Your gift, in any amount, will be automatically doubled this month thanks to the generosity of Newman's Own Foundation. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org.
The coal market is in rough shape. U.S. coal production fell 11% last year, and Wyoming's powerful coal industry is starting to feel the pinch. Three of the state's four largest producers are now in bankruptcy. In March, hundreds of workers were laid off from two big mines, and that's on top of hard times in both oil and gas. Inside Energy's Lee Patterson reports from Gillette, Wyoming's coal capital.
Gail Japp's horses are like grandkids to her.
This is my two-year-old, and this guy, he's just a yearling.
But she's preparing to give them up.
And there's a lot of stuff I'm going to have to sell.
So that she'll be able to pay her mortgage. Japp was one of the nearly 500 coal miners laid off recently. And that's significant because Wyoming's economy is built on fossil fuels. Revenue from coal, oil, and gas combined accounts for around 70% of the state's budget. And the workers are well paid. The average coal miner here makes more than $80,000 a year.
I'm David Bullard, a senior economist.
He's a senior economist with Wyoming's Department of Workforce Services. Bullard says those energy workers have an outsized impact on other sectors.
And so those people have money to spend, and they spend it here in the state, which supports other jobs in retail, trade, in housing, construction.
But now, businesses are closing, more homes are up for sale every day.
It is an absolute complete turnaround right now.
That's Carter Napier, Gillette City Administrator.
I'm not saying there are no job options here, but I am saying that the quality of job that they once had.
Those kinds of jobs, he says, don't appear to be available. That's what Gail Japp is finding out, as she tells me once we're inside and out of the wind.
It's not something you just get up and say, okay, well, I can go find another job in another town because I have responsibilities here.
Her 90-year-old dad, her grandkids.
I've been in Gillette since 68, so I've seen the oil boom come and go, and I've seen everything, you know, bad times and good times, but it's never been this bad, ever.
In Gillette, I'm Lee Patterson for Marketplace.
We're also following reports that the European Commission may levy a record $3 billion fine against Google for antitrust violations in the coming weeks. That's according to the British newspaper The Telegraph. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.